Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Bruce Stocking, along with Corinne Lilliths. Joining us on the phone is Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, and Sam Rohr, former legislator and now president of the Pennsylvania American Pastors Network. It's Friday. We're just looking at the end of the week. That's what it is, and the tongue gets tied a little bit. Good morning, and welcome to both all of you this fine morning in October.
Bruce, I'm going to take over now.
Yeah, you should. You should. It's been one of those weeks. Gary, are you there on the phone?
Yes, good morning, everybody. How is your area of Pennsylvania?
Oh, well, we were in some warm, humid air, and now we're looking at visiting the 50s up here for the week ahead. So fall is coming upon us, but you know how that works. You have fall for about a day, and then you go right to winter.
Yeah.
So
been there, done that.
Yes. And Sam, how are you this morning?
Today it's hard to believe it is Friday. The weekend's about upon us, but boy, I'm telling you, even though we're focusing on the issues of what we're talking about constitution wise, this week has been one fantastically filled week.
Oh, it has.
Some of the things touch on the constitutional issues; others are just amazing. But it's hard to believe.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to start off on, even though today we're going to be talking about legislating from the bench and some ideas and avenues to go if the Supreme Court makes decisions, which they're likely to do a lot these days, that just doesn't go along with what we believe constitutional issues and so forth. But and Corinne, you can talk on this one as well, is that this week when this story broke that I want to get everybody to talk about, I've been pretty animated about it because it is a pure First Amendment violation of the type that I don't think we've ever seen before.
And what I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about Houston, Texas, and the mayor down there, Mayor Parker, who has issued subpoenas to the pastors to turn over sermons, as I've been relating it to. It sounds like Joseph Goebbels wanting to take a look at everything that's in print before it goes out for the Führer to be happy. And I'll just go with that. And I know, Sam, you are one in particular that's constantly talking about the pastors in the pulpit getting involved in statements. I'm sure you have some thoughts on this one.
Bruce, I think you're correct. You think you're correct. And we will keep it very limited. But you know what? For those who are listening, you probably have been hearing this in the news. At least possibly you have. It ought to be something. It ought to be front page in every piece of media across the country, because I think it's probably the first time in the history of the country that I am aware of where any level of government, in this case was city level, city council level, it wasn't coming out of Washington, but it's only a matter of degrees. That's all it is. Subpoenaed the sermons of pastors in the pulpit and even communications between the pastors and their congregation relative to a couple of issues. If they had mentioned the issue which was at there in Houston, was called the bathroom bill. It's where they required to allow men to enter, use the same bathrooms as women. I mean, isn't that a logical, decent thing for people to get up and get concerned about? Well, many churches did. And 50,000 signatures were collected. Multiple churches were used as bases of operation, more or less, to help encourage that, but they weren't limited to that. But the city council, in order to push back that, issued these subpoenas to these pastors, picked these pastors out as, and even though the pastors were not involved in the lawsuit, they picked them out as heads of their congregation, and ordered them to issue to turn over their sermons. Now think about that. It's without you talk about any measure of First Amendment violation, and just from the standpoint of an average citizen is one thing. Stepping over the pulpit and into the church and saying, we want to effectively audit and evaluate and us determine effectively, we're God, we're going to determine what's right in what you're able to say from your pulpit, effectively what's being said, is just the most absurd thing that can possibly be done. It's not only unconstitutional, it's unbiblical, and it's unprecedented. And so I'm glad to say that there was quite a loud eruption of opposition to that, and the mayor ended up saying, well, I guess, you know, she backed off a little bit, but I don't think anybody should think for a minute, Bruce, mm-hmm. that she backed off with the intent that she's saying, well, I made a mistake.
Oh, no, no, yeah. You won't hear that.
Yeah.
You know, she may have said, well, we're going to have to just to kind of take a different direction on this. This was a testing of the waters. This was a throwing the gauntlet across. I mean, and she did it with the help of her solicitor. So
yes.
She wasn't totally on her own in this regard. But it is a wake-up call, we said, to pastors all across the pulpit, all mm-hmm. across America, to understand that there are those, in this case, this was the homosexual lobby, mm-hmm. but I'm saying that there are three entities, I think, in the country, Bruce, that really have some common things behind them. One, you've got communist, Marxist, an atheist mm-hmm. who hate God, hate the Bible, hate our Constitution, hate the rule of law. You also have the homosexual lobby, mm-hmm. and you have Islam.
Yeah.
And you take these three together, that what do they have in common? Just about everything.
Yeah.
And so I tell mm-hmm. listeners, you know, anymore, if you're not one of these groups of people, you'd better stand up and awaken to what we're talking about on this program here with our constitutional freedoms. Anybody who's not really a part of those three groups are the enemy as far as they're concerned. So right. This is where it's going. This is why it's so important what we're talking about.
Well, and it falls into the fact, which we've talked about on this program quite often, the foundation of this country, the structure of this country, and you whittle away at that foundation, and the structure is going to fall, and that falls right into that thing. Plus, you have the fact, too, that this is a little bit of political retribution to these pastors, because as the articles have come out on this, is that they were holding petition signings in their churches as well to defeat this bathroom bill, and wasn't taken too well by them. But again, another blatant violation of the trust mm-hmm. and the Constitution, First Amendment. And Gary, a few words from you, being the Constitution guy here, on yep. this whole debacle.
Well, it is indeed a debacle, but it's only a logical extension of what the IRS has been doing for some time, of course, with rules on what pastors can and cannot say, and a new initiative to start watching sermons more closely. So it's not surprising to see what has happened down in Houston. But it all revolves around the idea that certain groups, unable to achieve their goals through the legislative process, have turned to the courts yeah. to do that. They've turned to the judges to get their social policies enacted because we've let them. We've allowed ourselves as a people to come to the conclusion that the court has the final say on what the Constitution says and does not say. And that is, of course, a false doctrine because it's nowhere found in the Constitution. And if you read the Federalist Papers, particularly Federalist 78, Alexander Hamilton says that's exactly wrong, that the people have the final say on the Constitution, not the judges, not the courts, not even the Congress, for that matter. It is the people's document, and they have the final say on what it says.
Yeah, exactly, and you know, which brings us right into our topic. Isn't it amazing how even a current story today fits into the topics that are on our agenda for today, which is legislating from the bench?
Yeah, and Bruce, I want to mention to our listeners that they can go online and sign. There's a form online that I found yesterday that you can sign to get the attention and say that, you know, you're not going to stand for this, and that you care. So don't, you know, you do have a voice in this. So I encourage you to go online and sign a petition saying that this is violating our rights and you don't want it to continue. So,
yeah, exactly. And, you know, this is also a situation where, as Sam brought up, and we've been talking about it this week on It's a New Day, is that, you know, she got the legal aspect involved with this as well.
And I want to extend a welcome quickly.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bruce.
Go ahead.
If you're tuning in on your radio dial since it is 7:15, I want to extend a welcome. You're listening to 1180 AM WFYL. This is the We the People Constitution Matters program. We are licensed in King of Prussia, Philadelphia, and we remind and encourage you to head on over to 1180WFYL.com. You can stream in live anytime to listen to our shows, and you can contact us info@1180WFYL.com.
Right, and you know, fortunately, this time of year, the way the the air works and transmitting works, we actually go live broadcast over the airways, not just on the internet at this time. So that's why we had to take that pause. But
hey, Bruce?
Yes, sir.
Hey, I want to put a little plug in, if you don't mind. There's a movie coming out called One Generation Away.
Yes, I've heard of it.
And churches and Christian schools around the country are sponsoring it. Apparently, it's going to have only limited showings. In my area, it's just two dates coming up in October and November. But it's put out by a group called Echolight Cinemas. And the movie is really focused on the erosion of religious liberty in America. So if our listeners are concerned about that, they might look for information about where it's going to be shown in their area.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, that's called what? One Generation Away.
One Generation Away.
Okay.
Yeah, excellent. Now, Gary, with legislating from the bench, and which we're moving, yeah, everything seems to move in, and if our listeners who've been with us from the beginning and those that are just joining this program, welcome, is we're talking items of the Constitution, the different amendments. We're doing it in a way in which the document was written for the common man can read and understand it. There's no interpretation here because the document says what it states. And looking at these, which comes down to the fact of even court systems ruling against people who have voted for something, and I use the analogy all the time of with legislating of the bench, is that you can get a referendum on a ballot. It's been checked, it's been gone through, it gets put on the ballot, and the people vote for this referendum, which may not be what, let's say, the mayor of Houston would want. And then they challenge it, and it goes in the federal court, and the federal court turns around and all of a sudden says, well, that's nice you did that. It's unconstitutional, so we're not going to let it stand. So the voice of the people is suppressed on this, and that's legislating from the bench. And, Gary, you did an essay on this one. If you could start us off.
Well, yes. There is a bit of a problem, though, in that there's no specific definition or no common definition of what constitutes legislating from the bench, and various people have posited various ways to look at that. Sometimes they say when the court strikes down a statute from the Congress, that's legislating from the bench. Now that's judicial review, and that's another problem in itself, in that power is nowhere specified in the Congress, or in the Constitution. It comes from John Marshall's opinion in Marbury versus Madison. But my view of legislating from the bench revolves around when the court creates something new and novel out of a case that clearly is not in the Constitution. That's my idea of what constitutes legislating from the bench. And the best example that I've been able to come up with, and probably the poster child, is Griswold v. Connecticut, where the court manufactured this right of privacy, which they said could be deduced from emanations that come from penumbras of the Constitution. Really a bizarre opinion to read. But that they say that you can take the inferences of several different bills of rights articles, and from that you can construct this right of privacy. Now, I'm not going to say that there shouldn't be a right of privacy protected by the Constitution, but the point is, if the people of the United States want such a right to be protected by the Constitution, there's a valid legislative or constitutional process to get that as part of the Constitution. And that was bypassed when the court in Griswold said there's this right of privacy, and in this case it extends to the right to buy and use contraceptives. In Lawrence v. Texas, it extended that right to sodomy, and Roe v. Wade, of course, they extended that same right to aborting babies. Mm-hmm. So the court constructed a right out of thin air, and then applied that right on its own volition, not without asking the people how the people wanted that right to be extended. That's the danger of legislating from the bench.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Sam, on the state level, you've talked about this as well with the state courts and different rulings that went through on that. Comments along those lines with what Gary was just talking about?
Well, I mean, Gary, I thought that both what you just said there and the article that you wrote, which underlies the basis for this discussion, was extraordinarily well put together. There's no question about it, and we'll get into more of this, but you know why the courts want to do what they do. But there seems to be certainly built within every position of civil government, whether it's the law, the making of the law position, or the executive branch, the enforcing of the law position, or the judicial portion. There seems to be inherent within all of them that when a person gets in a spot in that position, whatever they're in, they want to do more than they are allowed to do. And it seems like everybody wants to make law, whether it's the president wants to make law through executive action or the courts want to make law through their creative rulings. There's a sense that somebody, they want to be in control. And I think that's what our founders talked about very early on. If you put people in office who didn't self-govern themselves and limit their actions, knowing that there was a higher law, God's law, moral law that sat up on top, and in this case, we're dealing with a constitution, which was to be our highest civil law. If we didn't voluntarily put ourselves under that and work within it, we effectively resist it and become partially tyrannical, if not fully tyrannical, which was the whole purpose for putting it in the first place. And I think that this is the kind of thing that we just, as people listen, they say, why? Well, overall, you've got a human nature issue where people just want to do their own thing. And if you happen to be in a position of a Supreme Court justice or others or appellate court, they have power, and many of them can't constrain themselves because I don't think in many cases they were properly chosen to begin with.
Yeah, now this you know, while you gentlemen were talking on this, and I'm going to throw this out there for both of you, the banning on this one, is being the human nature that it is, and that someone is given the authority for, let's use the word control, because that seems to fit in very much with what we look at today, what goes on in the political process, what we talked about, what's happening down in Houston. It's all the matter of fact of these employees that we hire wanting to control the people. Now, for our founding fathers, and Gary, maybe you can jump in on this one. I know it's hard. We can't get into their heads. We can only go off of what we read from the Federalist Papers and some of their other papers and letters that they've written in that. Why would they think that the trust in people would be, you know, so great that they would do the right thing, that they would leave it so open for these people to be able to seize such control? In other words, why did they think that John Doe over here, he'll be a man of good character, he'll make the right decision, and so we're going to write it this way without maybe putting safeguards in it?
Well, the founders had a very clear view of the fallen nature of man. I mean, there's nobody better to state it than James Madison, who in the Federalist paper, I forget the number now, but made the famous claim that if men were angels, no government would be necessary. Or if men were to be governed by angels, no government would be necessary. But in the end, you have to construct a government that controls itself. And there have to be these safeguards that are built into the system to keep the fallen nature of man from running amok. No better way to say it.
Yeah.
And so they had a very clear and, I think, realistic view of where things could go if they didn't build safeguards into their system.
Mm-hmm.
And it revolves around a power, what we call a power vacuum. If there is ever a vacuum in one area, somebody's going to fill it. Somebody's going to move in and exert their power in that area. The American people have fallen back and withdrawn from the political process in such great numbers that the courts have moved into that vacuum. The courts have seen the vacuum and wanted to move the country forward. The people have been unwilling to do that themselves, so the court has taken on that role. As I pointed out, Justice Ginsburg was famously asked about Roe v. Wade, And she said, well, the problem here wasn't that it was a bad opinion, it's that it moved the country too fast or too far too fast. Well, you know, that reveals a lot, that the courts, she certainly sees that the court's role is to move the country. That's not the court's role at all. The court's role is to decide on the legality of statutes.
Right, and of course the statement of history hoards a vacuum, and as you said, they've stepped into that. But with that being said, with the courts, you know, that's not their job to do. And that, what would bring them around to assume this role, knowing that legally it's not legal to do? Sam, your thoughts?
Well, I do. You know, this all has to be put in the context within what we're talking. We're talking about a representative or a constitutional republic. We're not talking about this discussion we're holding right now is not a discussion that you could have sitting in China,
yeah,
or Korea, or somewhere. This is a discussion that is for Americans who appreciate and have benefited by what we're talking about here. And it's the result of this thing called a constitutional republic, where the concept of law, they believed lex rex, appropriation to law, meaning that the law was above the king. God's law, moral law, sat up on top, and the king was not the maker of the law and the enforcer of the law and the decider of what was appropriate in the law. He was under God. Mm-hmm. And forever, and for those who made law, they were not over the law just because they made it. They remained under the higher law, God's law. This concept is a distinctive, and it runs counter to the whole concept of humanism right now that is controlling, this pragmatism that controls the thought of government today. They completely shove this aside. But when you shove that aside and you say, I really can be my own law, or if I'm in a position where I can control these things, and you shove this to the side, then, Gary and Bruce, this is when I believe then these kinds of things, actions, they're almost encouraged. Our culture really says, if you don't want to, you can believe whatever you want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
You can do whatever you want to do. And power emanates to that kind of position. And if they don't believe they're under the law, overall, lex rex, they then put themselves above the law, and I think that goes to the heart again of the human nature, but it also goes to a rejection, really, and a lack of understanding of the very essence of what a constitutional republic is all about.
Yeah, you know, and that's going to bring up the question as well for both you gentlemen. Why have we come to this? Why have people become so lackadaisical when it comes to this, and also allowing the courts to do, and for that matter, allowing our elected officials to do without the approval of the people, let's say? I mean, topics such as this, I think we need to get into, and also the fact that we need to look at different ways and examine. Maybe we can do that in the second half of our program.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do to rectify this situation, or at least attempt to get it back on the tracks in which we're intended.
Yeah, and I want to encourage our listeners to head on over to 1180 WFYL and check out our podcasts of all of our previous shows. For this show here, We the People, The Constitution Matters, you can go listen to them at any time. And for our other shows on this program as well, here on 1180 WFYL. We are going to head to a commercial break. We'll be back in just a moment here with more We the People, Constitution Matters. We'll be talking about what we can do to solve this problem of legislating from the bench. Stay tuned. Go to ShopRite.com for all of this week's specials. And we thank them for sponsoring this Constitution program as well as PC Repair. So with that, you are listening to We the People, Constitution Matters. And what else are we listening to right now, Bruce?
Well, we thought we'd have a little fun here, and since we're talking legal matters, give it a little appropriate background music. That's Perry Mason. I figured we'd get to that. But I do want to get right back into our topics that we've been talking about, which is legislating from the bench, judicial system in there. And I want to throw out the first question here, and Sam, maybe you can start off on this one, is why is the courts acting unlawfully as they are?
Well, you know, Bruce, you commented on this on the other side, and I think it's appropriate to say, why are they doing what they're doing? We've been talking a lot about the fact of what they are doing, and we've given some examples of what they have done. But why? And we talked about that a little bit before. If they, in fact, if the justices themselves refuse to put themselves under the law, if the justices themselves violate their own oath to the Constitution instead of and they step over and attempt to do the work of the other branch, they themselves can cause an action. And that, I think that's one thing. But the second thing is why are they doing it? Because they've been allowed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The other two branches, executive branch, which is, in the case of between them, the legislative branch, the justices are appointed. They've appointed people who've actually not limited themselves. They've actually intentionally appointed people in the past, which we know from the standpoint of Supreme Court justices why it's so important which president gets in, because they do appoint these justices. Mm-hmm. So part of it is that they've appointed the wrong people. Between these two branches. And the other thing I think, which is really key, Bruce, is that neither the executive branch or the legislative branch have done their constitutional duty in holding the justices accountable. In other words, the legislative branch is given the responsibility for the act of impeachment. When there are actions in the executive or the judicial branches where they violate their constitutional duties. When's the last time that you can imagine that happening,
yeah,
Bruce?
Yeah, this is the checks and balances work.
That's exactly correct. But checks and balances, Bruce, don't work unless you check and balance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there is and we can get into why that is, but that's the other part. But then I think in the third, because the people can't get away with it without anything, is that we the people have permitted it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I want to encourage our listeners, the we the people, to call in 877-667-1180. That's 877-667-1180 if you want to comment on this as well.
Now, Gary, with what Sam was talking about and laying out, the Constitution clearly states what they can and cannot do, and they're not doing it. What can we the people do about this? How would we approach this? This is a fundamental problem we've got going on here that is creating woe for all sectors of the populace in that. So maybe a bit of a review of what the Constitution says on this and what can be done.
Well, I put remedies to legislation for the bench into two categories. Things that can be done within the existing constitutional structure, and things that would require some changes to the constitutional structure to effect. In terms of what we could do right now, and Sam alluded to this, is first of all, we can elect better presidents. We can elect presidents who more closely typify the goals and aspirations of the largest majority of the American people. Hoping, therefore, that they will elect or nominate judges who also typify that philosophy. And so that's the first step, is to pay better attention to who we're electing presidents, knowing that they are going to be responsible for nominating judges with the concurrence of the Senate, of course. The second remedy that we have in the Constitution is impeachment. Judges have been impeached. It's certainly nothing that we haven't done before, but it's a very rare remedy, and it takes extraordinary circumstances, it seems, to invoke it. I think that that we have had those circumstances from time to time and have not invoked the remedy of impeachment because we don't, first of all, we the people don't know the Constitution well enough to know that this is available to them. Or under what circumstances it has been used in the past.
Well, and you also have to include in there, too, which is used, you know, maybe a little bit of a generality here, is when impeachment is brought up, all of a sudden the political gets in there, the party this and the political. And I don't know if that party wants to go there, and this is an issue as well that we're dealing with the inactivity that we have by our elected employees.
Well, and it's not like it hasn't been done before. Many of our viewers may be old enough to remember the impeached Earl Warren signs that sprang up across the South when the Warren Court was so activist in terms of breaking down the last barriers of segregation. Those in the South that didn't want that to happen certainly tried everything they could to put a stop to it, including a call for impeachment, which didn't really gain traction outside the South. So that is definitely a remedy. And one Supreme Court justice has been impeached successfully and removed from the bench in our history, so it can be an effective remedy. Another remedy that's built into the Constitution is called jurisdiction stripping. in Article 3, Congress has the authority to limit the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court and remove from their jurisdiction any topic whatsoever. Now, there is a danger to this. Some people have said, well, why don't we just have the Congress remove the topic of abortion from the Supreme Court's jurisdiction. The danger there is that if they did that, they would leave in place all Supreme Court rulings on that topic. So it would basically cement Roe v. Wade into permanency and not allow the court then to address that issue in the future. So,
well, you know, Gary, that's a very good point there, which is a lot of people believe that, well, if it makes it to the Supreme Court and they rule on it, end of game, done deal, there it is, live with it, nothing you can do about it. Is that truthful?
No, it's not, because it, once again, reveals a lack of education and a lack of understanding of the Constitution. The court, first of all, can reverse itself. It has done so numerous times throughout history. It takes... you know, obviously, you're looking at a new group of justices who look back at a ruling and say, no, they did it wrong. And Dred Scott is a perfect example of that. Well, actually, Dred Scott was overruled by the 13th Amendment. But the court, nevertheless, has overruled itself. Now, that brings up the another remedy. A constitutional amendment can reverse a Supreme Court ruling. And the 11th Amendment is, in fact, direct result of something that the court ruled on. I don't think we want to go into the details of that, but people can look that up. The 11th Amendment is here because Congress didn't like the way the Supreme Court ruled in Chisholm v. Georgia. So a constitutional amendment is a remedy, but that's a very, very high bar to reach. You know, we've only amended the Constitution 27 times and over that 200 plus years, so it's obviously a high bar, and it's going to take extraordinary circumstances for that to be used as a remedy. But there are remedies, and those are the ones that are built into the Constitution. Okay. But the final remedy I would mention would be term limits. And that would take a constitutional amendment, but term limits have been talked about for years, and not in just in terms of the legislative branch, but in terms of the judicial branch as well.
Well, you know, with the term limits, which I find interesting with this, is, of course, term limits for the president, I believe, came about after FDR died and left office, of course. And since he was such a great man, if he was so great, then why did they enact so fast to give the president a term limit? But when you're asking individuals that you have hired to do the job to vote themselves out of office, you know, that they're only going to hold that for a temporary period of so long, and that therein lies the rub. And it's finding people of good moral character to understand that this is a temporary job. It's not a permanent job. I'm coming in to serve the country and the people, and when I'm done with that, I'm fine with going home. That is a tough rub.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between trying to make a career out of it and then going into, but as opposed to that, you would go into it with the right intentions and wanting to actually do good. So if you know you can just make a career out of it, you know, you might lose focus over time.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm not saying it cannot be done, but I'm saying this is one of the hurdles that would have to go over to get to that. Gary?
Well, you know, I understand why the founders did what they did and set up judges, federal judges, to be to serve under good behavior. That is for life. They certainly wanted the judicial branch to be independent of any political influence, and this was one way to enact that. Now, the judicial branch has proven itself unwilling to be completely separate from any political influence, and we saw that in most vividly in the Affordable Care Act and how that was handled when President Obama came out and threatened the courts. The words are escaping me now, but their integrity if they voted down the Affordable Care Act when it came before them, and then Judge Roberts appears to have changed his vote at the last moment to allow that bill to be judged constitutional. So the courts have definitely not been able to completely separate themselves from any political influence. There's been many cases where it's been blatant.
Right.
But yes, the founders gave us this permanency to the judges, but in modern view, we've seen the danger of that. And so I think we need to seriously consider a constitutional amendment that would impose term limits on the judicial branch.
Yeah, I think you'll also term limits on all elected positions, say the truth. I think that then you'll get a lot of people standing behind this one without question. Sam, your thoughts on this?
Excuse me, I apologize for that. But, you know,
caught him off guard.
Yeah, you got me. I was thinking deeply there. You know, the remedies that you put forth, Gary, are, I think, provide a good framework for those of us who are talking, those who are listening this morning, to understand that when we talk about these issues, such as this judicial activism, something which is out there, a matter of serious concern, by anyone who is a constitutional, somebody who's a freedom-loving person in this country for a long time. We've talked about this issue. It's there all the time. There are very often very few remedies that are actually put forth as you've laid them out here. But these are doable. At the end of the time, some of these are long-term, like you're talking the constitutional amendments. They're not immediate fixes. They take time. There's a lot of education involved in that. Certainly electing better presidents, certainly that's electing better individuals to Congress, which brings us all the way back we were talking about at the beginning. That's what Penn was talking about. If you do not put people of integrity and character into these positions of public office, they will subvert it. They will subvert all that's there. We have a tendency to think that in our generation and perhaps those that have gone before that what we have here in this country is something that will exist forever, and that it is the that's the rule, not the exception. What we're talking about here, and the real opportunity to even talk about these things here right now, this is the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
This was in fact a holy experiment, but this experiment takes a lot of cultivation. That's what we're talking about here. So we got to go back to those roots. You've got to start with people of integrity and character. They have to understand the rule of law. They have to understand the sovereignty of God, the nature of man, the purpose of law, the purpose of government. If they don't understand those basic things, it doesn't make any difference where any of this goes. And I would submit that many, many of those who call themselves conservatives and many who call themselves Christian conservatives do not understand the fundamental underpinnings of what we're talking about right here. So from my perspective, a pastoral perspective, being in office before, I'm saying it must come back to the pulpits again, not the only place, but it's got to come back there, because every one of these things have a moral, biblical underpinning and principle out of which all of these things come. If you do not teach them or mention them, there's no way in the world these things will come about automatically.
Yeah, well, of course, Thomas Jefferson, for example, back in 1799, understood this, and with the people, and we talk quite often about good moral and good character in that, and he stated, whenever a man has cast a longing eye on office, a rottenness begins in his conduct.
Ooh.
And, I mean, that kind of gets right to the heart of what you were just talking about, Corinne.
Sam, I have a question for you. Do you think going, and what you're saying, it goes back to the pulpits. I want to touch on what we said earlier with the what's going on in Houston with the mayor and pastors having to, well, she wanted pastors to turn over their sermons. Do you think that this is going to wake up the pastors around the country, or could you see this going as a door opening for other mayors or people who are like, well, I want, you know, giving them ideas? You know, how do you think this is going to play out?
I think it's going to have a combination of both. I think what you saw there by that group in Houston,
mm-hmm.
I think it's not a matter of if that was going to happen, but when.
Mm-hmm.
This is a mindset that's out there moving about. This Freedom From Religion Foundation, as an example, now all this coming out of this White House, this concept that there is a lawlessness. You can do what you want to if the agenda demands it. Well, if their agenda demands it, what they're thinking, not the moral agenda. So I think that this will be but a first pass. This is not the end.
Yeah.
And her withdrawal does not mean that all of those who think that way are going to decide, well, we're never going to do that again. No, I think you're going to see it happen again. Now, the second question is, will it wake up pastors?
Mm-hmm.
And will it wake up the church at large? And will it wake up the conservatives and the Christian conservatives? I think only partially. I think that it is alerting a core of pastors who have had some sensitivity already earlier about their responsibility, but for the bulk of them who have walked away intentionally from actually engaging in these controversial issues that they may call, mm-hmm. I don't know that that's necessarily going to awaken them. It didn't awaken them during the days of Hitler.
Yeah, do you think it will scare them away more, if anything, because they don't want to have, you know, political people coming after their sermons?
Well, I think that you're going to use, I think you'll have some who have been very overtly timid up to this point will look at that and say, see what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think you're putting a fire in the belly of a number of others. And I've seen some real stepping up. And so, no, I think you're seeing a division between those who are driven by fear and those who are driven by duty and courage in the defense of these matters we're talking about. And that's the best way I can say it. I think the ultimate end is yet to be determined, and I would like to think that part of what we're doing on this program and things like it will help to make a determination of how that outcome is actually going to be determined.
Yeah,
a big problem that is happening with this story is that it is a big story. It is a constitutional issue story. However, the media, all outlets of the media, either are not mentioning it or mentioned it in such a brief passing, just like talking about the, it's a nice day today. And yeah. I think a lot of the concern that people have is they don't trust their government. They certainly don't trust the judicial system one bit. Is if it went to a court situation, would the courts uphold the Constitution, First Amendment, and you know, the right of freedom of speech, or right of what you've talked about, freedom of religion, what the pastors can do in their church. They have the freedom to do. And I want to start, Gary, your thoughts on that first.
Well, I think it comes down to the name of this program, your banner, We the People. First of all, in terms of the pastors, we unfortunately have a nation of short attention spans, and this story will fall away, and a lot of people will forget about it. A lot of pastors will say, oh, it's settled, it's over, the controversy has left us, and I can go on to my normal business. But we the people need to hold our pastors accountable. We the people need to make sure that our pastors realize what has happened. That they may be unaware of it still, despite the attention it has gotten. So we need to make sure that we're holding them accountable to stand up for religious liberty in the pulpit. And we got to keep the pressure on. We got to keep that going. So, but we the people also need to make sure that we are educated and we are informed ourselves as to what the Constitution says and does not say. I gave a talk recently which I entitled Constitutional Illiteracy, a Plague of Biblical Proportions. And that's really what it is, because it is pervasive. It is pervasive throughout our nation. We need to understand this document better, and the better we understand it, the more involved we will become, and these sorts of problems will just be fewer and fewer as we go forward. So that's where I lay the responsibility here. I lay it on the people. We've got to make sure that we continue to keep this issue of religious liberty active in our congregations and our churches and in the pulpits, and we've got to educate ourselves.
Sam?
I agree with that as well. And, you know, we talked about it earlier. We're in a time of blame shifting and blaming everything on everybody else for what goes wrong without taking responsibility. The congressmen blame it on the president. The president blames it on Congress. They all blame it on the courts. And but in reality, as you said, it comes back to we the people. They're there because we've permitted it to be there. If we participate in that same kind of, well, it's their fault, and somebody doesn't step up and take responsibility and say, all right, regardless of who, we're now from now on going to do our job. If the people don't do that, they will not, in positions of civil government, naturally do their jobs. They will do what government does best, and that is control. And they will do what the natural tendency of man is to control more. And so that I agree with you 100%. We, the people, must be taught, we must know, we must do, and we cannot sit back and say, well, that's just the way it is. Because if we say that's just the way it is, we have said we're satisfied with the way it is. We can't just complain, and that's why I think all these things we're talking about with specific remedies and all of that, all of these things we talk about, if we do not end up with an action step, a step we can actually do, then we're a part of the problem. But I think all these cases, we're offering things here that are fundamental, and they're both a solution and then they're forward action. And so what I would say, Bruce.
Yeah, so we have to, kind of like what I said last week, the life of comfort, and it's a dangerous life of comfort that a lot of people are living in. So what exactly can we do? Like, what are some examples for our listeners to encourage them that, hey, this isn't, you know, don't throw in the towel yet?
Yeah, that's a good question, because a lot of people are frustrated. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, there's much that they can be doing right now in the comfort of their own home, as the commercial says. You know, there are some great constitutional courses, free, online. Hillsdale College is the one that is preeminent, I believe. They've got online courses on the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution. There's one ongoing right now on the presidency itself. And these are, as I said, free and self-paced. You can take them at your own schedule. There are several great books. I recommend, first of all, the Heritage Guide to the Constitution. That is also online if you don't want to purchase a print copy of it. But there are great books available that can help you understand the Constitution from the founder's perspective. The Original Constitution by Rob Nadelson is another one I strongly recommend. And then if you're interested in this issue alone, I recommend Mark Levin's book, Men in Black, or Pat Robertson's book, Courting Disaster, or Dr. Edwin Vieira's book, How to Dethrone the Imperial Judiciary. All of those are great, great books that deal with this judicial activism issue. But and then there's probably in your area, wherever your listener is, there's probably somebody like me who's teaching the Constitution to small groups here and there, gathering up whoever he can to teach the Constitution to. So there are many, many ways that people can take action and inform themselves and learn without a great expense. You don't have to take an expensive course. There are courses that cost money. And the final resource I'll mention is YouTube.
Yeah.
There are several great YouTube courses out there. Michael Badnarik has one. The Institute on the Constitution, I think, has some of their lessons on YouTube. So it's not that there aren't resources. It's a lack of motivation.
All right. Well, Gary, thank you very much. Information like that is what is needed for the public to get started. And
Sam, do you have any last things you want to say before we end our program today?
Well, just very quickly, in addition to these things which the people can do, I'm going to come back in from my perspective and say that the pastors in the pulpit must be engaged in teaching the moral underpinnings out of which arise all of these things. These two being worked together then gives us, I think, the pathway forward.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, gentlemen, considering that we have talked on this, the Houston story is very important, that I personally do not want to let it go. Be following this on our It's a New Day program Tuesday to Thursday, and also with this program as well. And gentlemen, what do you think about next week that we talk about First Amendment religion in this country again, to get more in depth into that one? You gentlemen on board for that one?
works for me.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, as Gary said, referring to a TV commercial, I'll also refer to one as well. We're not stopping there. We're going to continue to go on this journey on the Constitution, examining the various aspects of it, hopefully providing you information to give you guidance on what you can do to participate, to take back your country, to take ownership of your Constitution. And until next Friday, you've been listening to We the People, Constitution Matters. I'd like to thank my co-host, Corinne Willis. I'd like to thank Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, and Sam Rohr, President of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Network. I'm Bruce Stocking. Have a great weekend.